Again. Okay, the recorder has started again. All right, so in my book, NTI, Romans chapter 8 is on 270. How about you all?
270.
270, the same in the paper. All right, here we go. The world and all you think about the world is illusion. There is not one thought that you have about the world that is true, except that the world has no truth in it. This is a true thought. This is a true thought given to you by me and echoed through Jesus. This is what he meant when he said he had overcome the world. This is what he meant when he said that his kingdom is not of this world. Jesus learned through willingness to see that the world is not truth and truth is not of the world. One thing that seems to be increasingly happening to me is I'm getting quieter and quieter and quieter. The latest thing that seems to have happened is that I'm having a lot of trouble talking about the past or the future. Truly only this moment has any sense of, I'm not going to say reality, it has a sense of here-ness to it. This moment has a sense of here-ness to it, and the past really does not seem real, and the future really does not seem real. And what I noticed lately is that when people start asking me, this weekend I was at a conference, and so people were asking me about what I was doing. They were asking about the past, and they were asking about the future. And I found I just couldn't. It was like I was trying to be polite, you know, and strained to give answers, but I just couldn't. And when I came back, you know, of course Danielle asked about the weekend, which is a normal human thing to do, and I just had to say, it's too much of a strain. I can't go there. For me, where this getting quieter started was a few years ago, but it started with starting to realize that my opinions had no basis, that my opinions were just opinions. And I started having fewer and fewer and fewer opinions. And at first, I felt antisocial, because I was in conversations where people were discussing, you know, current events or whatever, and everybody had an opinion, and I started feeling antisocial. But at some point, I began to accept that I didn't really have opinions, and that became okay. And I'm sure I'll get to where I accept that I don't really have a past or a future, you know, in the way that I used to think that I did anyway. And that will be okay, yes.
About the future and the past. I am beginner in this.
Yes, beginner at NTI. Uh-huh, yes.
In the course of Michael too. And sometimes I'm a little confused.
Yes.
And I know that is because I'm beginning in all this. And sometimes I say, okay, past is past, and I'm not going to go back over there. And I'm not going to let the past affect my present. And about the future, sometimes I say, okay, I have to live my present because it's that going to give me my future, right? But sometimes I think, and I need to save money, like, right, you know, for my retirement or to when I get older. And I need to save money to, because if I'm going to get sick, I have to pay the hospital and all that. Sometimes all that kind of thought come to my mind.
Yes.
And I say, I don't know what to believe or what to do, you know?
Yes, I do know.
I don't know if I say, okay, I'm going to put all that thought in a box and I say, stop. something.
Yeah.
For that. Because I see the people, friends, my husband, family, everybody say, no, I'm saving money, or I'm working because I need to see my future.
Yeah, I know, I totally understand. One thing about, you know, about the future in particular, at some point, if you don't already start to see that, at some point you start to see that the future is imagination. You know, like you're imagining the future. The only, like I said, the only thing that has any sense of reality is this present moment. But there's a lot of things that can happen in this present moment. In this present moment, you can have an intuitive feeling to put some money in the savings account. In this present moment, you can have an intuitive feeling to spend some money to buy a new car or you know, whatever. In this present moment, you can have an intuitive feeling to plan a family vacation. But all of those, even the planning, happens in this present moment. You know, sometimes people, when we talk about, you know, that the future is not real, that the future is just imagination, people get now actions confused with the future. Like if, you know, as far as I know, we're not going on a family vacation this summer, but let's you know, it hasn't come up as an intuitive feeling to plan one this year. But in past years, certainly that's happened, where it's just been come a time where there's just this knowing that summer is coming and it's time to start planning a vacation. And so then, you know, I might start talking to Ron and Jasmine about where they might want to go. I might start looking things up, you know. But when am I doing that? I'm doing that now, right? So you know, it's really, until you get it, it's a little bit difficult to know the difference between now and the future. But if you're saving now, you're saving now because you feel to save. And so you save. You don't actually know if you'll ever live long enough to retire. You don't know if you'll win the lottery. You don't know if you'll inherit money. The fact that you're saving now is not, you know, anything you imagine around that saving is imagining. All you know, if you're saving, is that right now you feel to save. That's all you know. And so it's a matter of staying with what you know now, and allowing, you know, what we call the future, allowing it to unfold when it becomes now. And what's happening for me is that somehow my mind, I don't know what's going on, but somehow my mind really grasps more than it ever did before that now is all that there is. And so what's happening is I'm being much, much, much more focused in the present moment. And the past, it's hard for me to even bring it back unless, you know, unless it comes back on its own. Sometimes it comes back on its own, like a memory or a pop in your mind. But guess when that memory is happening? Now. The memory is happening now. And so any thoughts that we have about the past and any thoughts that we have about the future are nothing but thoughts. The only thing that exists, if you could call it existing, is this present moment. And at some point we just become so heavily into this present moment, so here now, that it's even harder to bring up thoughts about those. When you believe in them more, there's more thoughts about the past, there's more thoughts about the future. But as you let go of them, there are very few. It doesn't mean there aren't any, but there are very few. And they seem to show up when they have a purpose more than anything else. So back to this paragraph again, when Jesus says, he says, there is not one thought that you have about the world that is true, except that the world has no truth in it. This is a true thought. So like the thought I have to save for my retirement is an untrue thought. The intuitive feeling to save now is different. That's different than the thought I have to save for my retirement. One thing that, you know, everybody's aware, of course, of the latest story, of course, about the bombing that happened in Boston. And last night I received an email, a long email from someone that is convinced that the Boston bombing was a government conspiracy and that the two boys are innocent and that they were framed. And it has all kinds of evidence. You know, it's very long, and they have pictures, and they circle things in the pictures, and they say, notice this detail here, and to support their story. And I showed that to Danielle, and what Danielle said to me is, people will believe anything, won't they? Mm-hmm. That's the truest thing that ever came out of Danielle's mouth.
That?
Uh-huh. People will believe anything, won't they? We all believe stuff. We believe different stuff, and that's where conflict comes from. But we all believe stuff. And the stuff that we believe affects us much more than we realize. It affects, you know, how we react in situations. It affects, you know, what we fear, what we get angry at. It affects who we choose as friends, who we choose as enemies. And it's all coming from beliefs. And if we could, I think this would be an impossible task, but if we could write down every single belief that we're carrying around, probably no two people have the exact same belief box, right? We all believe different stuff. So if 6.5 billion are walking around, 6.5 billion people are all walking around, each individual with its own individual set of beliefs, and there's no other person that has all that same set of beliefs, why do we think we're so right? But we believe stuff, you know? And that's what this paragraph is getting at. There's just not one thought about the world that we have that's true, except that there's not one thought about the world that we have that's true. That's a true thought. But the rest of our thoughts, you know, I don't know where they come from. I don't know, maybe some of them were born with. Maybe they're imprints from previous lifetimes. Some of them were taught. Some of them, you know, we make up. And then we believe what we made up. And all of these beliefs that are completely individual color our world, color what we think we see, color our reactions, color who we choose as friends, who we choose as enemies, you know, just everything about us. And they also block that intuitive flow. The fewer beliefs we have, the more we're moved by that intuitive flow. Right? Because then we aren't thinking based on our beliefs. So, and of course, the people who are believing this conspiracy theory, you know, they already had a belief that's leading to this idea being sticky for them, right? Maybe they already have a distrust of the government, for example. Something's already in place there, so that when this story comes, they go, yeah, and they grab onto it. So what happens is one belief or idea leads to us grabbing onto more as well. Anything that fits with our belief system, right, we take it. Things that don't fit with our belief system, we discard them. So we filter everything through our belief system. Okay, so verses 5-8. The mind that believes in the world believes what it experiences to be true. And so it lives the experience as if it is true, and it suffers heartache. But the mind that accepts the spirit's interpretation of the world accepts that the world is not true, and so it does not suffer its experience, because it has accepted that truth is beyond experience. This mind knows peace, because it also knows that that which isn't true cannot affect the truth. So one thing we've talked about in this class is that what we are is isness. That's the term I often use. Isness, life, some people use awareness. A consciousness is another term that's sometimes used. But what we are is isness. And again, if you can pay attention to your isness to any degree, you don't even have to be an expert at, to any degree, what you'll begin to notice is your isness never changes. Is that sound I love? My alarm in Germany, not Germany, Israel. Is it Tom?
Yeah.
Hi, Tom.
Did you hear that? Did you hear Regina say hi? Yes.
That's okay. Okay, so it must be important. So if you're aware of your isness to any degree, what you notice is your isness is never affected by anything. It's never affected by anything. And the more that you come to notice that your isness is never affected by anything, something in you begins to shift. Again, this is not anything that you make happen, it just happens. But something in you begins to recognize the isness as real and the experience as unreal. That doesn't mean experience stops, at least not for me at this point. I suppose at some point there's an awakening where experience does stop. The experience continues. It's just what happens is that the meaning that you put on it grows weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. And then what happens is, you know, things that you would have perceived as major blow-ups before, they still happen, only now you're not emotionally affected, your mind isn't going crazy worrying about it, but you still effectively deal with it. You know, like the one story I've told a million times, I might swear again, the one story I've told a million times because it's such a good example is when I came home from India and the septic system had come up into the floor. The shit was everywhere, right? Well, actually, it wasn't everywhere by the time I got home because Danielle had done a pretty good job of cleaning it up. But the septic system had come up in the house and it had soaked up into the walls. It had soaked into the carpet. So what we had to do is we had to have some guys come first, clean it. They had to rip up the carpet. They had to paint the floor with some kind of paint that would kill any chemicals. They had to cut out part of the wall. You know, just the house was in a major upheaval for about 3 months till it was fixed. But I did not feel even an instant or a smidgen of upset. I just did what I had to do. I called the insurance company, you know, and then I communicated with the guys and I filled out the paperwork and I moved the computer upstairs and found out we didn't have internet upstairs, so I called those guys and got internet upstairs. And, you know, it's not that it wasn't dealt with, right? It was dealt with in a very practical way. It's just that there was no upset. And the only reason that happens is because something in you, again, it's not intellectual, it's prior to the intellect, something in you realizes that the experience is just a temporary experience, you know, like a dream. People always use the word dream. It's a temporary experience, and it doesn't affect what you are to any degree. And so then you somehow settle into this peace, this constant, consistent peace that's in alignment with your isness that is never affected. In the Bible, they call it the peace that passeth understanding, right? Because it seems like you should be upset to everybody else who's looking at you. This is a major deal, right? But you're not upset because you've learned to be focused on that which doesn't change. And the experience just shifts and changes. So that's what this world is talking about. If the mind is still believing in the world, which means it also believes that I'm the personality and that I'm the body and that things have to go a certain way or I'm very uncomfortable, right? If the mind still believes in the world, then the mind suffers in the world at some point. I mean, sure, it has happy experiences too, but things happen where it suffers. If the mind accepts that the world is not true, right, because it's come to know the isness, then experience can still be experience. But the mind doesn't suffer. There's peace. Verses 9 to 11. Life is not in the world. Life is beyond the world. The Spirit of God is life, but the Spirit of God is not in the world, because the Spirit of God is truth, and there is no truth in the world. You are life, and you are truth also. So you must not be in the world, for there is no truth in the world. The world is an illusion of experience within the mind. You are not in the world. How many times was that said there? So we have the experience of perceiving the world from within a body. So there's this feeling that if we are spirit, right, then the spirit is in the body. But even that is not true. That is still experience. And the way that it came to me was it's more like our awareness or what we are is more like a crystal ball. And the world is inside the crystal ball. Right? So we're the outer ball, and the world is inside. And the world can shift and change, and the ball itself is never affected. In fact, the world can completely go away, and the crystal ball is still whole and unaffected. And, you know, many of you may have had experiences at some point, they may be come and go, but you may have experiences of, for example, that you're not really moving or changing, because your awareness is constant. It's so constant that even as the body seems to get up and walk from inside to outside, the awareness doesn't change. And at some point when you're focused on the awareness, it's almost as if you're at the level of being at the outer crystal ball looking in, and you still see the action changing, but there's not the feeling that you're getting up and moving, or that, you know, that you're going from inside to outside. It's more like the scene is moving and you notice your constantness. Right? Because it never changes. And you know, if there's any way that you can start to just focus on your isness, just check in with it multiple times a day, you'll get stronger and stronger feelings of not changing, even while the body seems to move from one place to another. The sun rises and the sun sets. While everything else is changing, you'll get the strong, strong sense of the not changing. And then you just, it's like you're watching everything change more than you are changing. Okay, verses 12 to 17. You are the Son of God, not by your birth, which is illusion, but by your truth, which is of God. You need not earn who you are by acts in the world of illusion. You are who you are through truth, which is of God. The world is a world of thought, and every thought that you have ever had is expressed in the world. But the world is like a playground where thoughts can be expressed freely without affecting reality. So we talked a little bit about this before. I kind of remember talking about this last week, I believe, where all of our thoughts, both the thoughts of the wrong mind and the thoughts of the right mind, are expressed in this scene we call the world. They're all here. And, you know, sometimes people look at some of these wrong-minded thoughts and they think that's a really terrible, terrible, terrible thing. And the appearance can be a really terrible, terrible, terrible thing. Like one of the things that's in the news now is somebody stabbed to death an 8-year-old girl in her house and they don't know who that is yet. You know, nobody's going to jump up and down and cheer and say, you know, what a wonderful experience. I'm so glad we can have experiences like that. Unless they're just really deep in denial. You know, that's not a positive appearance. But if you focus on your isness enough, again, you will come to see that even while things like that are happening in the world, your isness is consistent, it's constant. And you also start to realize that what's true of you is true of everyone and everything. Something in you just intuitively knows this. So somehow, although the appearance is not positive, and you're able to have compassion for those who believe in the world, and you understand how much they're suffering, you know, and if you're close by, you'll do what you can to help, right? I feel the floor vibrating. Oh, it's your purse. Okay. I knew mine was over there, so I knew it couldn't be me. Something in you, again, starts to become at, at peace. Not that you're happy, but something is you, in you is at peace or calm all of the time. And so even if a terrible appearance should happen, you are able to move in and do whatever your role is in a very calm, very self-assured way. You know, one thing that happens when people learn this teaching with the intellect and it hasn't come into the heart or into their true awareness at all is that people become, well, stupid. They become, you know, all in denial of experience. True compassion does not deny experience. True compassion, even if it's the fulfilled peace and calmness, still acknowledges and understands and respects the suffering that others are having. But it's able to do it with the calmness and with the peace inside. But there's not a disconnect from experience in the way that it has to be denied. It's just that it's not, you're not affected by the experience. Do you see the difference? It's not a disconnect. You're just not affected. So you don't become all panicked. You don't become all fearful. You don't lose your alignment with your intuition, right? And at the same time, you don't celebrate these appearances. This is why you're continuing to choose to let go of ego within yourself and to become more in tune with your intuition and to become more in tune with your isness. It's like we talked about last week. It's like there's two things going on and you're choosing which side you want to be on. You want to be on the side of awakening. So when the appearances happen, you're calm and you're peaceful, but then again, you do whatever it is that you need to do. If you're directly involved, you may in some way with your hands be doing something. If you're not directly involved, you may choose to just sit with the thought of that appearance in your mind and be at peace with it. Or if you're not at peace, if you find some sadness coming up, you allow that sadness to come up and you be at peace with that. Or if you see some fear or rage coming up, you allow that fear or rage to come up and you be at peace with that. There's an ability to be at peace regardless of the emotion that may be coming up. It seems like I heard Byron Katie say something about how she loves to help the, I'm totally using the wrong words, but how she loves to help heal the world by feeling the emotions and being with them, you know, the world's emotions. And so that happens. I was watching something recently, I can't remember what it was, and, you know, I felt, oh, I know what it was. It was watching the bomber's mother talk. And she said, you know, she said, I'm a mother. She goes, I feel like a mother feels. And when she said that, I felt that. You know, you feel it when I said it just now, right? But I'm at peace with having felt that. I'm at peace with allowing that to rise up, come up, and go. Even that emotion of feeling that experience does not disturb the peace. So the peace is constant, the calmness is constant, the mind, the emotions, and the world change. Okay, let's see. But then, here's sentence 7. You have become lost in the playground of your mind, and you have frightened yourself there. But your home is unchanged and unaffected by your imaginary play. Your father's heart knows only your truth. And now you are called to lay aside play and come home to the truth of who you are. So, of course, what's happened for the average person in the world is they're not at all aware of their isness. The isness is still present all of the time. The isness is absolutely constant all of the time. But people are so focused away from the isness, which includes being focused on your own thoughts and your own emotions. Your own thoughts and your own emotions are actually outward from the isness, right? People are so focused outward that they're fully experiencing the outward experience without having any anchor in the calmness or the peace. And so then they're just tossed about. I think Jesus used the example of a house built on sand instead of a house built on rock. The house built on rock is when you have your anchor and the calmness and the peace. The house built on sand is when you don't. So, you know, you're really happy with really good appearances, and you're really upset with the appearances that definitely are not as favorable. And you're just shifting all of the time. And you think you're completely lost, you're completely confused, you're lost in fear, you're lost in worry, you're lost in grief, you're lost in whatever. But that awareness is still there the whole time. So that's what it means when you actually are still home, right? But you, even though you are still home, you somehow need to return home too. It's like both statements are true. Because your attention is not there. Your attention's out.
You know, Michael Singer in The Untethered Self talks about this and uses the analogy of when you're sitting on your couch and watching a movie on TV, and you get so wrapped up in it, you don't notice what's going around you. You're not feeling your body or anything. You are in that show,
right?
And that's what he's saying that we've done. So it's just pulling back from that.
Well, and there is an absolute truth to that, that even as you awaken, you start to notice, because even with movies, I'm not as into the movie as I used to be. There used to be certain types of movies I couldn't watch because they were too violent, too scary, right? And a friend of mine, Devin and Zoe, were at our house, and it was over a year ago, but Devin brought this Sylvester Stallone movie that was like probably the most violent movie I've ever seen in my entire life. And I watched the whole movie smiling and laughing and nothing. Yeah, I was like, wow, look how they cut that guy's head off. I mean, how did they make that happen? And you know what I mean?
Separation.
I was totally aware that it wasn't real, and therefore the bloodier it got, the more I was like, wow, look how well they did that, you know? We're used to it, and Dad, no, I can't watch this, you know, and it would have been horrible. But it's all about where your attention is, and somehow I've come to realize movies really aren't real. And you know, I'm always, Jasmine and Danielle can still get caught up in movies, and that's what I'm reminding them, is it's not real. It's not real.
I've always been there, and my son used to always say, Mom, it's only a movie. And I say, I know it's only a movie, but what bothers me is I know stuff like that happens in the world. And that's where I get caught, because it's showing me what somewhere out there in the world, this same thing is happening, and that's what bothers me.
That's what bothers you, yes. Yes. So again, the only, now there may be another way to do this, okay? I'm only speaking from what I know. The only way to become less affected is to focus on the isness as much as you can.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, because now that we're trying to apply that we're learning and whatever, and you say, pull yourself back to your isness and all that. Okay, so say, and you said earlier where if you felt the sadness, let it come up and focus on the sadness. Is that what you
think? Actually, I still focus on the isness or the calmness, but I allow the sadness to come.
You allow the sadness. Okay, so my question then is how, if I find myself getting caught up in whether it's the movie or the thought that something like this is happening in the world, how do I pull myself back, because I'm feeling that pain or that whatever, to my isness? How would you advise a person to do that?
Go ahead. You want to answer first, Dan?
Is it just I guess that would be technique.
Yeah. There,
whatever technique the individual decides on.
Yeah, he's absolutely correct. I was going to say there's a number of practices, and so it depends on what works for you. One of the first practices that I used was a mantra. Whenever I noticed I was getting too caught up in the world, I would say, I am that I am. And at that point, I still wasn't even aware of awareness yet, but I learned to become aware of my heart first. And so I would, you know, then just focus on my heart and just be still for a moment. And it was through that practice that I began to become aware of my awareness. But once I got the edge of my awareness, which at first, you know, when you first become, at least when I first became aware of it, that's what it felt like. It felt like an edge of something that I was aware of that I could lose very quickly. Like it didn't feel solid. So then what I started doing is I started changing my practice. I started asking myself, as things shifted and changed, even I seemed to shift and change, I'd ask myself, what is constant here? And somehow just asking myself, what is constant here, allowed me to refocus on it. The interesting thing about our truth is that you can't see it like you can see your emotions and see your thoughts, because your emotions and your thoughts are out in front of it, actually. So it's just like sitting here, you can't see your eyeballs. You see out of them, right? But you can't see them. You can't see your truth, but you can be, somehow you can still be aware of it. You can be aware that it's always there and that it's not changing. But you can't see it. And so sometimes I think that people, the mistake that people make is they go looking for something that they can see. And what they often find when they go looking for something that they can see is like maybe their heart will open up and they'll feel this really great feeling. They go, oh, that's it. That's my real self. But the problem is it doesn't last. And then they say, I had it and I lost it. Well, the question is, what was there when you had it that's still there now that you lost it? Right? That's you. Not that wonderful feeling. And that wonderful feeling was great. And when your heart opens up, I mean, when my heart opens up, I sit back and enjoy it too. But I don't panic when my heart isn't feeling like that, because that was just another passing experience. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other day I was listening to Benito.
Yes.
Massaro.
Yes.
And he was talking about awareness, and it's like you have to step way back and just say, what is it that sees? It may even be beyond that, but I was just aware of being aware for, oh, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. And there's really, it doesn't seem to be any big deal at all, really. And yet, that's God.
Yeah, and what that is very stable. In fact, that's one of the words A Course in Miracles uses to describe it, as stable. It's very stable, it's very constant, it's always calm, it's always peaceful. And it also has in it, for lack of better words, it has in it this knowledge of safety. Because it has an awareness that it can't be affected.
So that would be a place that you'd want to hang out if you were working on a fear, overcoming a fear.
Yeah. And in fact, now, my experience is, I won't lie, because your experience may be the same. My experience is the more active the mind becomes, the harder it is to find awareness.
Yeah.
So there's no sense in saying anything different, because that's the way it is. So that's why sometimes other techniques are helpful, like breathing, self-talk, to calm yourself down to the point where then you can start to find the awareness. Because usually when the mind's just all, that's when, awareness is a dim, dim idea at best. It's still there, but you're so into the movie at that point. Right? So sometimes you need a bridge. Breathing techniques, reminding yourself. I always use self-talk. Self-talk always worked for me. Reminding myself of what I wanted to remind myself, like, this too shall pass. But then as you calm down somewhat, then you can start to get the sense of the awareness. At least that's my experience. Yeah. But again, the awareness is the same whether it's an extreme fear moment or whether it's an open heart moment, whether you're 5 years old or 102. It's always constant. It never changes. And now I'm speaking from what the masters say, because I don't know this from my own experience yet. But what the masters say is that the awareness that we're now working to get in touch with, that's actually only like a sunbeam to the sun. We're learning to become in touch with the sunbeam. The Course would call that probably true perception. And then as you rest in the sunbeam, at some point the awakening happens, and that's the sun. So remember that also, if something in your mind tries to tell you, because the ego will try to tell you anything, if the ego tries to tell you, well, this awareness thing isn't much, just remember, this is only a sunbeam. I'm just trying to be rest in the sunbeam. And once I rest in the sunbeam, then one day the sun will be realized. And so I'd be happy with that. And in fact, one thing that Michael Langford wrote in his book, he used the example of a being in a mansion with many, many rooms, but they're all completely, completely dark. And there's one room with a window that has a slight crack of light coming in it. And he said, if you're trying to find the sun, he says, doesn't it make sense to follow that little crack of light instead of running around in all these dark, dark rooms? And that's what you're doing when you're finding your awareness, which right now is just your human awareness. It's only the sunlight, you know, that's only the sun beam rather than sun. But the more you stay with it, you're following that little crack of light. It's shining through a window, and you keep following that little crack of light. Eventually, you're going to burst open the window, and you're going to find the sunshine. So when the ego tries to tell you that you're wasting your time, that's not even truth. Say, no, I'm not wasting my time. I'm following the path of the light.
That happened to me sometimes. Sometimes I hear myself saying, what are you doing? Stop doing this. Don't do this. I'm losing my time.
I
can do other things. Something like that. But sometimes I say, no. I have to focus on this. If I want peace, I have to continue doing this.
But and the nice thing about learning to be aware of your awareness is it's always there, which means you can always practice it. You know, it's great when you have those times that you can sit still and, you know, kind of in a meditative way watch it. But you know what? If you get up and you're really, really busy running from one thing to another, your awareness is there. So you can still tune into it. You can still pay it. You can't get away from it. Right? There's no way you can leave it. Therefore, it's always there for you to pay attention to. No matter what your life is, no matter what you do, no matter if people like you or don't like you, you know, it just doesn't matter. There's nothing, nothing that can separate you from it. Right? All right, so let's see. Verses 18 to 25. Creation, oh, this is very good. Creation is not suffering over your experience in the world. Heaven sheds not one tear, for heaven neither cries nor has compassion for that which hasn't happened. Now that sounds cruel until you begin to get the sense of it yourself. And remember, even as you're aware of the human awareness, which is still constant, but it's only a sunbeam, even there you have the calmness and the peace that's constant through any experience, even your own most horrific experience. You may mourn, right? But you'll be aware of the calmness as you're mourning. You know, you don't go into the franticness anymore. So imagine how much more the sun is, right? If you can be that detached from experience just by focusing on the isness that you're aware of as a human, imagine how much more detached from experience you are when you are the sun. Right? Now, when this says that heaven neither cries nor has compassion for what hasn't happened, this isn't encouraging us to not have compassion for people who suffer. It's just saying that there is an awakening that is so bright, so light, so beyond this world, that it's the complete awakening. It just isn't aware of the world at all. But it isn't telling us not to have compassion for people who still believe the world. In fact, you know, one example you could use is there's the person, which is the ego. Then there's the Holy Spirit, which is the bridge between the ego and awakening. And then there's awakening. Awakening is not really, full awakening is not aware of the world. But the Holy Spirit, which is the bridge, is aware of both full awakening and the world. And the Holy Spirit has compassion. You know, Jesus in A Course in Miracles tells us he's a manifestation of the Holy Spirit. Well, that Holy Spirit had enough compassion to give us A Course in Miracles, to give us NTI, you know, to give us the teachings of Inner Ramana, to give us everything else that it gives us. So the Holy Spirit, which is aware of kind of the truth and the belief in non-truth, does have compassion. But again, you even right this second, there are things happening in the world that you have no compassion for at all. Why? Because you don't even know they're happening. Right? It's not that you're not cruel or unloving. It's just, how can you have compassion for something you can't, you have no awareness of at all? It just doesn't exist.
I just say one thing.
Yes, sir.
When I read this paragraph, I thought of, you know, if you say 2 + 2 = 7, you haven't destroyed the truth, which is 2 + 2 = 4. And so, 2 + 2 = 7, you know, it's not a sin, it's not a, you haven't broken the truth, there's no need for anyone to have compassion on
right.
somebody who thinks 2 + 2 = 7 because it hasn't affected anyone.
Because it's still 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A very mathematical way of explaining. Very good though. Okay, let's do 2 more paragraphs and then we'll stop. So starting with sentence 3. My dear child, listen to me now and listen to me well. All that you experience and believe to be true is not true. It is an experience dreamed up within your mind to satisfy a curiosity that you posed. Only you have come to believe your own dream, and this is why you suffer. Heaven does not believe what isn't real, and heaven does not suffer, but she does wait eagerly and lovingly to welcome you back to the realization of yourself. So again, the curiosity that we pose would be that question, what if everything was different than it is? Or the Course calls it the tiny mad idea, right? Be at peace and know your truth within your heart. The love that you are is written there as a reminder of your truth. Be quiet and know your truth. Be still a moment and know all is well. And we'll stop there for today because we've used up a lot of time already, so we'll continue with this next week. But again, it's you know, this is all talking about shifting from who you think you are to who you are. And that's just a matter of becoming aware of your isness, no matter what's still going on with you and with the world. And so again, it's not a matter of trying to change what's going on with you or with the world. You know, what the spiritual ego will do is say things like, I'm not supposed to be sad about this. Right? I'm not supposed to be afraid of this. I'm not supposed to be annoyed by this. That's the repression. It's not about changing how you feel, denying how you feel. It's about learning that even while you feel sadness, even while you feel fear, even while you feel anger or hatred or guilt, starting to tune in to what is constant. What's here, even while I'm feeling guilty, that wasn't here a while ago, I mean, it was still here a while ago when I wasn't feeling guilty. Right? What's here, even when I'm feeling annoyed, that was still here a while ago when I wasn't annoyed? You know, look for that which isn't changing. That which is constant, and most definitely you. You can't separate yourself from it. Your annoyance comes and goes. Your fear comes and goes. Your guilt comes and goes. There's something that doesn't come and go. What is it? So I think that's a good assignment for this week, don't you? Just to, you know, try to notice that isness. Be aware of that isness. Notice what's the same, even as everything else, even your thoughts and your emotions are shifting and changing. Start just taking a moment to notice what is still here. And again, you can't see it like you can see your emotions and your thoughts, but you can be aware of it.
Could you kind of characterize it as the blank screen on which
yes.
Everything in your mind plays out?
Yeah, like everything in your mind plays out as the movie, and you're the movie screen, you mean?
Yeah, yes. Awareness would be the white screen.
The white screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what also happens, you know, sometimes people will say, well, my awareness comes and goes when I go to sleep and when I wake up. But as you get, that's more your consciousness. As you pay attention to this more and more and more, you'll become aware that there's an awareness that's present even while you're sleeping. That's how come when you wake up, you know you enjoyed your rest. Right? You know you enjoyed your rest when you wake up. How do you know you enjoyed your rest?
Because you wake up happy.
Yeah, but there's still, you know you enjoyed the rest. There's something in you that knows that you enjoyed
it's
the rest.
It's subtle.
It's very subtle, but it's there.
As subtle as...
It's very subtle.
It's the smallest.
Yeah.
So,
all right, so I'll go ahead and stop the recorder, and we'll take just, again, we went longer, so we'll take just a few minutes of silence, and then we'll discuss it.